Please turn with me, if you will, this evening to the book of Zechariah, chapter 11. Zechariah, chapter 11, second last book in the Old Testament. There are outlines in the back in case you wanted one and didn't get one. As we begin this evening, one of the things that's interesting, if you think of the words of Peter when he said, shepherd the flock of God. And Paul makes the same kind of statement when he talks to the church at Ephesus or the elders at Ephesus at Miletus. And if one is going to define how to shepherd the flock of God, there are a lot of places one might look, and one might rather go to Acts 20 or to 1 Peter 5. But it wouldn't be the normal place to come here to these three verses. But I do not think that there is a better description of what a shepherd ought to be just by looking at the negative aspect of what the shepherd that God is going to bring will be. We come to this passage, and you understand again, let's go back to the book of Zechariah. It's 6-6, right? The first six chapters, prophetic, dealing with Israel's future. The last six chapters dealing with some of the same things, but from a different point of view. But he deals again with the prophetic future of Israel. The two chapters in between, chapters 7-8, are a message to Israel responding to their request to God. But even in that, there is a prophetic tone to those two chapters. But in the last six chapters, two burdens. The first, it says, the burden of the word, Lord, starting in Zechariah chapter 9. You'll notice that it begins there. It makes that statement, the burden of the word of the Lord is against the land of Hadrach. When you go to chapter 12, you'll see the burden of the word of the Lord concerning Israel. Two burdens. One of them dealing with what God is going to do in the future with the nations that have come against Israel, and that's in chapters 9 and 10 specifically, going into chapter 11. But in chapters 12 to 14 is God's purification of the nation Israel. So first of all, God's punishment of the nations that have come against Israel in chapters 9 to 11. And then God's purification of Israel itself in chapters 12, 13, and 14. But as we were looking at this section, this actually forms a conclusion to one of the great parts in chapters 9 and 10 where God is giving them some positive statements. In the last few verses of chapter 10 are so positive of God's blessing to Israel, God's judgment of their enemies, but all of a sudden comes chapter 11 and is so depressing on the heels of such a positive statement in chapter 10. Especially, I mean, he concludes in chapter 10 with such amazing statements. Verse 11, he will pass through the sea of distress, strike the waves in the sea, so all the depths of Nile will dry up. And then in verse 12, and I shall strengthen them in the Lord, and in his name they will walk. And then all of a sudden, open your doors, O Lebanon, that a fire may feed on your cedars. Wail, O Cypress, for the cedar has fallen, because the glorious trees have been destroyed. Wail, O oaks of Bashan, for the impenetrable forest has come down. And so on. The picture goes from the top of the heights of Mount Lebanon, which is Whitehead because it has the snow throughout the year, and all the way from there where you have massive cedars growing, and God says, I'm going to destroy those cedars. And if, in fact, I can destroy the cedars, I guarantee you the fir trees are going to go too, because if the cedars go, the fir trees will. And once I do the cedars up on the top and the fir trees on the way down, I guarantee you the oaks in the plains of Bashan are also in trouble. And then once I've done that, the grass that the shepherds have, it's going to be destroyed. And I'm even going to go further than that. The pride of the Jordan, all the shrubbery and all the bushes that grow for the wild animals in the Jordan River Valley, it will be destroyed as well. Why? And now comes a statement where God says, because I got tired of your shepherds. The prophet, the priest, and the king. Three shepherds in verse 8. He says in chapter 11, verse 8, in 1 month, I annihilated the three shepherds. I reflected on that a bit this morning, just reflecting on this evening. I'm intrigued because the three shepherds that he says, I'm going to annihilate in 1 month, and I'm going to take their place because I tire with the fact that they're not shepherding my sheep. And I reflected, you see. I don't know if you can process this, but in my mind, as I processed this week, I understand God getting after the priests because they don't shepherd the flock. I understand that. I can even understand God getting after the prophets because they don't shepherd the flock. God says, I'm going to wipe out the kings because they don't shepherd the flock. I mean, even when you think about it for a while, see, they decide we want a king. God says, you don't need a king. They say, well, we need somebody to make an army. God says, I can win wars without a king. If I can do it with Gideon, I can do it with anybody, see. And so God said, I don't need a king to make war and to build an army. Well, we need a king for this because we need the structure like other people have it. And God says, the minute that happens, you know what he's going to do? He's going to build up his own thing. He's going to tax you. And that's exactly what happened, of course, as you know. You see, they defined the leadership for Israel by the world standards of what leadership ought to be. And God says, I don't care whether you're a prophet, a priest, or a king. I still want you to shepherd my flock. And because you don't, I wipe out all three in 1 month, and I'm going to take their place. I will become the prophet. I will become the priest. And I will become the king. Well, as you think about this, then, what happened? He came. And he brought two staffs with him. It says in this passage we looked at last week. One was the staff of favor. The other was the staff of unity. Now, or binding, literally. What God says, when the Messiah came, if they had accepted Jesus Christ, two things he would have provided for them. First of all, protection from the enemies outside, the staff called favor. And the other, he would have provided unity within, between Ephraim and Judah, okay? And in fact, this is exactly what was promised. If you go back to chapter 9, when the Messiah came, right? Rejoice, chapter 9, verse 9, greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout in triumph, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming. He is just and endowed with salvation. Humble and mounted on a donkey, even on a colt, the foal of a donkey. And this one, this king, your king, he will cut off the chariot from Ephraim, the horse from Jerusalem, the bow of war will be cut off, he will speak peace to the nations, his dominion will be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. He came seated on this donkey. He came to provide peace within and peace without. But what they did, he says, tell me what I'm worth to you, and this is all you're worth, is 30 pieces of silver. The price of a gourd slave, the price of a woman slave, that's all you're worth to us. In other words, any day we can go out and hire a slave, the cheapest slave, to do as good as you do for us. That is an amazing statement. When God sends the good shepherd, I am the good shepherd, he says in John, right? And the good shepherd came, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. He says, okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I am going to give you a shepherd that you deserve. I will give you a foolish shepherd. I will give you a shepherd that does everything I don't believe a shepherd ought to do, and he's going to come do it. Two questions that come in here, go down with me, because this is in the latter part of this passage. And the Lord said to me, take again for yourself the equipment of a foolish shepherd, because Zechariah is the one who is symbolically doing this. For behold, I am going to raise up a shepherd in the land. Now, why am I, and notice, I am going to do it. See, and you know, when you look at this and say, first of all, the question happens is take the staff, and some say these two different kinds of staff. No, the question is not the staff. The question is the attitude of the shepherd. The one shepherd came with the same staff that the other shepherd had to care for the flock, and they cut him off. He says, therefore, I will send you a shepherd. And he will have a staff just like that, but the difference will be the attitude of the shepherd that's going to come. Now notice with me then, as we look at this foolish shepherd, the identification of this foolish shepherd as he comes. And I want you again to realize, he says, I am going to raise him up. It is, you know, he is not just going to come, I am going to do it. You know, it's interesting to go back. The leaders of the nations have oppressed Israel. That's bad. The leaders of Israel have oppressed Israel. That's worse. But when the God of Israel does it, that is the ultimate. And so God says, I'm going to raise him up. So when, in fact, the Antichrist comes, And I believe he is the ultimate fulfillment of this, although I believe that Israel has had a whole bunch of shepherds like this down through the years, but the ultimate fully shepherd yet to come will be the one who is ultimately going to come. But understand, God raises him up. Say, how would God, why would God do a thing like that? Because God is going to say, if this is what you want. You know, I'm amazed when people say, whoa, look at the pastors we have. My friends, you ask for them, you see. People moan. They ask for what they get, and they get what they ask for, right? I've warned guys that go out to their first church. I've said it to Ken's, all right. I says, you know what, the first church you pastor, they deserve you, and you deserve them. Anybody that hire you first time around deserve what they're getting, whatever, you know. But and for you to take that church, you deserve what you're getting. But you know, it's fascinating here because it's God who does this, see. God says, you turn down the good shepherd, I will send you a foolish one. But now, go with me through this, because I want you to see what was evil. And as you see what's evil, you begin to understand then what God expects from a good one. And as you look at this, I remind you, this is not the first reference to Israel's sheep. Back in chapter 10, we saw it. Notice, if you will, therefore, he says, well, we'll go back to the first part of verse 2, for the teraphim speak iniquity, the diviners see lying visions and tell false dreams, they comfort in vain. Therefore, notice, the people wander like sheep. And they are afflicted, why? Because there is no shepherd. Now notice something else I want you to see in verse 3. For my anger is kindled against the shepherds. I'll punish those male goats. For notice, the Lord of hosts has visited the flock. You know what? It's interesting because Ezekiel has the same story. God says, if you won't shepherd my sheep like I want my sheep shepherd, I will come shepherd them myself. You don't want to visit the flock? I will visit the flock. You don't want to care for the flock? I will care for the flock. And Israel wandered like sheep because they had no shepherd. So in this context, okay, having referred them to that, he comes now to speak to them about this shepherd that is going to come. And I want you to walk with me through this, because what is fascinating by this statement here, this is not man's assessment of what a foolish shepherd acts like. All right? It's not man's assessment. This is not a man's statement of things that a shepherd ought not to do. This is God's assessment of what a foolish shepherd does. This is God's reflection on the way the shepherd of his flock should not act. This is God's statement about things he finds wrong with the way certain people shepherd his flock. Therefore, look with me at the way good shepherd ministers to his flock in stark contrast to what you have here. And you know what it reminds you so much, see, is just that whole statement of John, right? See, the hireling fleeth, and you're going to see what a good shepherd ought to be and what a bad shepherd is like. So first of all, notice with me, go here, the identification of this useless shepherd. Now, as he begins this, there is a word used here. He starts out in chapter 11 and makes this statement. He says, in verse 16, I am going to raise up a shepherd in the land of Israel who will not care for the perishing, seek the scattered, heal the broken, and so forth. Now, the very first thing that he starts out with here at the very, very beginning is this word foolish. I'm going to raise up a shepherd. And he calls him in the previous thing a foolish shepherd. It's fascinating. If you look in the margin of your NESB, if you have that, a useless shepherd is what it says. It's the only time it's found here. It comes from the verb to grow thick. It's interesting. Years ago, there was a professional golfer who was doing well and made so much money, he went out and bought himself a huge farm. And then he had so much fun to get out there with the chainsaws and stuff, working out there, cutting down trees and stuff. And then what he found, his hands became so callous in using of those instruments like that, he went out to try the golf club and he'd lost the feel because of the calluses on the hand. Now, it's interesting here because that's not, at least he had an excuse, okay? But as you look at this business, it's very interesting because really what this is comes from the idea of to grow thick. And therefore, in a sense, to become callous, and therefore, because of the callousness, to become insensitive. You could translate foolish shepherd, a calloused shepherd. You could call him an insensitive shepherd. Therefore, when they do an interpretive way and say he's a useless shepherd, he's useless because he's callous and because he's insensitive. Now, when you start with this whole thing, first of all, as you look at this, it's very fascinating. As somebody brought up, you see the issue is, and you start with this. See, when we, as God's people, become callous to the Lord, and why do we become callous to the Lord? Because so often we become callous to His Word. When we become callous to His Word, we become callous to His purpose. We are not sensitive to the purpose of God. And when we become callous to the Lord, callous to His Word, callous to His purpose, we then become callous to His people. And He begins by defining this, and He says, that's just where it is. We're callous, we're insensitive. That's why almost every time when I open class in prayer, if there's an overriding prayer of my heart, is that those of us who study the Word constantly, day after day after day, 7 days a week, it is so easy to do it academically and to lose that sensitivity to God and to His Word and to His purpose and thereby to His people. If there's any prayers that we not do that. You wonder at times why, I mean, you've heard it said, you hear somebody preach a great sermon. In fact, I remember so clearly years ago working in a little wee church down in the middle of Los Angeles, and this fellow who was pastoring it preached a dynamic message on 1 Corinthians 11. It was that we were having communion, preached this incredible message. We had communion that day, only to find out 2 days later he'd been having an affair with a woman in the church for a while. And you stop and say, how? How can you preach? I mean, but you can. How? Because you become callous and you just do it mechanically, and it's not something that comes from deep down in the heart. So he begins with this, and then he says, the shepherd I'm going to give you is going to be an insensitive, callous, and therefore worthless shepherd. Notice the next thing. He starts out in verse 17. He says, woe to this worthless shepherd. Now, literally is really is shepherd of worthlessness, shepherd of nothingness, if you will. It comes again from the verb to be weak. And the whole point of it is he is weak. And because he's weak, he's insufficient. And therefore, because he's insufficient, he's absolutely worthless. You've got a shepherd that is insensitive. You've got a shepherd that is weak and insufficient to the task, and therefore he's a worthless shepherd. And so foolish shepherd on one hand, worthless shepherd on the other. And then what's fascinating, he's not only foolish and insensitive and worthless, but notice he's also negligent. Verse 17b, he leaves the flock. He leaves the flock. Forsaker of the flock. And again, I remind you back to John, see, the hireling fleeth. So it's interesting as he begins this thing, he starts out by saying what this shepherd is like. He's a shepherd that is callous, he's a shepherd that is weak and insufficient and therefore worthless. He's a shepherd who forsakes the flock. So he starts out here with these negative statements about what the shepherd does. But now notice these other statements he gives, the description now of this useless shepherd, of this worthless shepherd, of this forsaking, negligent shepherd. Notice what he says in verse 16, as he describes four things that he will not do. The very first thing he says, that this shepherd, he says, I will raise up a shepherd in the land who will not care for the perishing. The word caring for the perishing has the idea of, even the idea of visiting is literally what it is. But it's interesting because when you think of caring for the perishing, we're back to Israel. Let's go back to Psalm 23. The picture of Psalm 23 is an incredible picture because it is the picture of a shepherd taking the sheep in the morning and taking them across, if you will, the desert area, but taking them out to a place where in the middle of the day when it is so hot and the sheep dare not be out any longer, takes them into a quiet place by the quiet waters, if you will, as they sit there and they pause. But you see, you never stay there for just the purpose of being there. You must get back in the desert and go back home. And as they're going back home, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and it's used in the wrong way because it has nothing to do with death. It has to do with impending death because they'd walk through these places in the evening as they're going home and the shadow is starting to be cast by these mountains that they're walking between. And the wild animals are crouching up. They're ready to pounce on any straying or straggling sheep that comes behind. And you see, I walk, it has nothing to do with death, it has to do with the trials of daily life. You don't leave Psalm 23 till you're ready to die, because you'll waste a whole bunch of years, okay? Yea, though I walk through the valley of impending death, I will never fear evil. I can hear Dr. Feinberg saying, I must not want, I must not fear evil, because thou art with me. You see, what happens when you have a flock of sheep, and when one of the sheep gets out from that flock of sheep on a cold night, you have nothing to bunch up against to keep warm, right? When the sheep are going and you are away from the flock, you are away where danger is impending and where the wild animals come and nothing can protect you. And he says, you see, the useless shepherd doesn't care when people are out there cold because they're away from the warmth of the flock. Number one, I just tell you something, it's awful cold away from the flock. And so many of us in times of real need, we move away from the warmth of the flock and it gets colder and it gets worse and our condition goes from bad to worse. And yet you see when people are out there, it is a dangerous place to be. But this shepherd doesn't care that they're out cold by themselves dying in a freezing night. This shepherd doesn't care that they're away from the rest of the flock and ready to be destroyed by something that will pounce on them. And so he looks at this and he says the very first characteristic of this thing, he does not care about the perishing. He will not even go after these ones. The picture is just very, very clear. And it's fascinating because he says they'll be cut off. So he will not even visit them. It's interesting you should look at this too. Notice the next part, but he will not care for the perishing. He will not therefore seek the scattered. But by the way, let me go back and deal with this word for a while, just because I was going to pass by because of time, but let me just deal with this word for a while. It's interesting because the word that is here is a word that comes from the idea to visit. And where it's used in the Old Testament usually has to do with somebody going out to visit something with a sense of looking into its welfare. And really the issue about this thing and caring for it is they don't go out to visit the sheep that are outside of the flock to check to see how they're doing. We do not shepherd a flock rightly when, in fact, we do not go visit for the purpose of seeing the nature of the flock that's out. I mean, the sheep that's outside of the fold. And that's why, of course, the great song, there were 99, right? But one was out, and again, the shepherd went out to find him. Notice this, and we'll leave that then. Notice the next one here. He will not seek the scattered. And again, this ties right on to the other one right before it, because here you have it as a sense of going out to seek it. Not only does he not visit it to find out what the welfare is, he doesn't go out to seek the one that is scattered. And that builds onto that. But now notice the next one. He will not heal the broken. Now, you know what's fascinating when you think of the first two? You have to go somewhere to do it, right? If the sheep is away in the cold of the night by itself and is freezing, and you don't go, you see it takes an effort. You can sit there and say, boy, it's a cold night. I really don't want to go out tonight. You know, the schedule's been heavy. I just don't have the time. I'm not sure I have the energy to make it through tomorrow if I go there tonight. That takes some effort, and you think twice about this. Or say something scattered. You usually have to make some effort to go out there when something is scattered away from the flock and go do it. Those two take effort. You've got to get up and go do it, right? This one doesn't take effort. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to get up and go to find the sheep that's out there. You don't have to go search to see where it is. All you have to do is take the one that's broken and heal it. It is one thing you can justify why you can't get up on a cold night to go out and minister to a lost sheep. You may be able to justify why it is that you can't go out and find a sheep that's scattered, but when you can't even take a sheep that's broken down and hurting and be a part of healing when it doesn't take any going anywhere to do. But God says this shepherd won't even heal the broken. I'm intrigued because when I think of this passage, there's no doubt Galatians 6:1 comes to mind. See, this is not a matter of having to go anywhere. It's just a matter of having to do something. Galatians 6:1 that says that when a brother is overtaken in a fault, and he has to be overtaken, that thing. And I'm amazed at this passage. And it's when you know for a fact that it's happened, right? This is not, and you see, we do this. We hear somebody's fallen. You don't talk about it. You don't gossip about it. You who are spiritual, what? The word is restore such a one. Katartizo. Put the pieces back together again. Heal them. Make them useful again. We criticize. We condemn. We destroy. It is amazing what we do. But a foolish shepherd, see, he doesn't even care to heal the broken ones. Now, this next one is fascinating to me. Because I look at this one and I'm not, you know, it just is intriguing to me because I understand these others, okay? This shepherd, first of all, is a useless shepherd. He's a worthless shepherd. He's a negligent shepherd. He doesn't go visit the flock to find out what their needs are. He doesn't seek the ones who are scattered. He doesn't heal the ones who are broken. But notice the next one. He doesn't sustain the one who is standing. That is the most awesome statement. Just think about it for a while. Just think about this for a while. I mean, all these other things you understand. This one is tough to understand because it is something that we don't even think of often. You take advantage. You just think, you know, they're always going to be here. They're never not going to be here until all of a sudden something happens and you begin to realize, oh my. You see, we get so busy caring for all the needy of the flock, we don't sustain the ones who are standing. I think let's just talk about our partners. Just get to take our wives or husbands for granted. They're always there. They're never not there. I will never forget because my wife has always been there, right? It's a dim, distant past somewhere, okay? After a baby was born, I'm not sure exactly what, there was an imbalance for a while, and for a couple of weeks, it was different. And I tell you what, it was different than anything I'd ever experienced, and all of a sudden you realized how great it was to always have somebody there, okay? When all of a sudden you begin to realize this isn't like it's always been. But you see, it's so easy to take each other for granted. And those who are standing, we don't care for because we're so busy caring for those who are hurting and those, and we don't even care for them, but we're so busy doing for those, we don't care for these who are standing. Doesn't even sustain the one who is standing. And I think of those of us, even as we look at each other tonight, we just figure we'll always, always be there for each other, see? You think I'll always be there for you, and I think you'll always be there for me. You see, but we don't minister to each other because we figure they just always be there. That's how it always is. And a foolish shepherd doesn't even take care of those who are standing with him because the day may come that you see they're just not there anymore. When all of a sudden you get that call and say, Pastor, just, you know, we're quitting, and you say, how can you quit? You know, if you quit, I quit kind of stuff, right? Amazing statement. Foolish shepherd does not sustain the ones who are standing. And then I'm moved by that and taken back by that because I just wonder how many of us take advantage of each other and take each other for granted and don't ever think that anything could ever happen. But it can, huh? Amazing. Now notice, someone has tried to carry the negatives on the rest of the way through down here, but so in other words, just coming back to this, okay, it is not enough just to rescue the perishing and care for the dying. One must care for those who are robust in the flock. By the way, let's go back and run through this. He doesn't reach out to those who are in peril because of the peril that he may incur for himself. That's the first one, right? He doesn't even go out to seek the scattered because of the fatigue that he might bring to himself. I mean, he doesn't even heal those who are evidently broken, though they be right there, because of the time and effort he might even cost himself. But it even becomes so bad and so worthless, so negligent, that he doesn't even care for the healthy, though they have very little need of his care. Yeah. Now notice something else. Now he goes to two other things, because not only don't they look out for others, all they look out for is themselves. Notice the statements as he goes on now to move it to a positive but still a negatively positive statement. Instead of that, he will devour the flesh of the fat sheep. Boy, they do, all right. And they know who the fat sheep are. And by the way, it is emphatic word order. The meat of the fat sheep will he devour, is how it literally says it. They go after that. They're after this. That's why the requirements for an elder must never be after personal gain, not after sordid gain, right? But you see, his incredible greed and appetite will goad him on to feed on the flock instead of feeding them. His unbridled appetite will prompt him to eat the fattest and best sheep of them all. Do you know what disturbs me a little bit with regard to this? You watch. I've watched it over the years. People who take advantage of other people. And you know what? Other people love to let them do it. It's beyond me. You watch people following foolish shepherds who are ripping them off, and they somehow just seem to enjoy being ripped off. And it isn't like there aren't some good shepherds to follow. It's just intriguing to me. But anyhow, you look at this and sense this. So the very first thing he does it, but that's not even bad. The worst part, notice this, he will even tear off their hoofs. Do you know how bad this is? Listen, think of a sheep for a while. Think of their hoofs for a while. And I want to ask you, how much food, meat, do you think you can get off the hoof of a sheep? Huh? There's not much meat in there. Now, I say the same thing when it comes to eating duck's feet kind of stuff, but there's still something in there that you can eat, right? Well, I'm talking about these are hoofs of sheep. I mean, they are so bad, they will even rip off the hoofs to try to cut down to get the last morsel of meat they can from the sheep. In our day, they don't mind ripping off the rich. They don't even mind ripping off the widows. They don't care where in the world they get it from. They'll go down to the very last morsel because they want for themselves. And they're not caring for the flock. They only care for themselves. An amazing statement. So he looks at this, and you know, it does remind us so much, even of our own day, and certainly of so many of the shepherds that Israel has had over the years and the one they will have. But now listen, he says, I'm going to judge this, okay? So what am I going to do? He says, all right, what I'm going to do, notice in verse 17, a sword will be on his arm and on his right eye. His arm will be total withered, and his right eye will be blind. You see, I sent him to you as a judgment to you because you didn't want a good shepherd, and I gave you a foolish one. But I can't handle this foolish one either, so I'm going to judge him. And I will cut off his right arm, or I will wither his right arm, and I will blind his right eye. I ask why? What should any good shepherd be doing with his eye? Looking out for the flock, should he not? What should any good shepherd be doing with his right arm? He should be going to visit the flock, seeking the scattered with his eye, and then healing the broken and sustaining the ones who are standing. See, that's how you should use the good eyes and the good arms. And God says, if you don't use your eyes and your arms, if this foolish shepherd doesn't to shepherd my flock, I will wither his arm and I will cut off the sight in his eye. Because God says, I will take away those very things that should have been used in shepherding my flock. Amazing statement, isn't it? I realize it's all about a foolish shepherd. It's all about God's estimation of what a foolish shepherd is. But you see, God's estimate of a good shepherd is he does all of those things that a foolish shepherd will not do. And God tires of shepherds who do not shepherd the flock. And God always judges. On the other hand, God says, if you won't visit, I will. So here the responsibility comes to us, shepherd the flock of God, Peter. Shepherd the church of God, Paul. Why? Because he purchased it with his own blood. This is not our church, 'tis his church. Not even semantically is this our church. This is not our flock, 'tis his flock. We do not define how this church and how this flock must be cared for, he does. And I guess my prayer for my heart, as well as for yours, is that we will shepherd as God would have us shepherd, and that we will be as the good shepherd, and certainly not like a foolish one. All right. Amazing passage. All right, now, tonight, as we conclude, help us know just briefly how best we pray for you as we head into this week. You know, I ask you, how do I best pray for you? Now, I want you to tell me just briefly how we can pray for you.